As anyone who watched the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade last Thursday knows, most of the balloons and floats featured fantastic characters out of children's cartoons, TV shows, movies, and books. But there was at least one humanoid oddity, a giant balloon called Jeeves, decked out in spats, striped pants, and a cutaway coat. The Jeeves balloon, and the Broadway play that inspired it, is the latest testament to the enduring popularity of Jeeves' creator, the writer P.G. Wodehouse. A new biography of Wodehouse has just been published. It's written by Robert McCrum, the literary editor of The Observer in London. Book critic Maureen Corrigan has a review.
Approximately 15 minutes after I started reading Robert McCrum's new biography of P.G. Wodehouse, I had to stop. I was getting too many ticked-off looks from my students. They were writhing through a midterm exam. I was taking advantage of the quiet to sit at my desk, drink coffee, and crack open Wodehouse, A Life. But it wasn't working. Students in the throes of an exam don't appreciate hearing snorts of laughter erupting from their professor. If I'd explained that I was chortling at quotes from P.G. Wodehouse, my students would have only been further mystified. But if I'd begun reading from one of Wodehouse's antic masterpieces featuring his cast of immortals, such as the mentally negligible Bertie Wooster, his unflappable butler Jeeves, and maiden Aunt Agatha, my students, many of them cult fans of the already arthritic Monty Pythons, would have recognized the genre of British humor that Wodehouse invented. As McCrum puts it, Wodehouse gave England an infectiously lunatic version of itself. His is a timeless, airy universe of bright young things, drunken gadabouts, and crumbling aristocratic piles, described in a language bristling with Edwardian slang and self-coined Woosterisms, words like zippiness, oompus-boompus, and squiggle-eyed. Throughout this smart and elegantly written sparkler of a biography, McCrum reflects on why Wodehouse clung to his core belief that through lightness and lunacy, life could be bearable, an ethos that was the source of his artistic genius as well as his tragic undoing. Pelham Grenville Wodehouse, nicknamed Plum, was born in 1881. His father was a judge serving in Hong Kong, his mother a Chile matriarch. They were strikingly absentee parents. Wodehouse and his two older brothers were shipped off to relatives and different boarding schools in England. Between the ages of 3 and 15, Wodehouse saw his parents for a total of barely 6 months. Without being psychologically heavy-handed, McCrum discusses how this early trauma formed Wodehouse into a man who instinctively reacted to sadness with jokes and an achieved sunniness of disposition. After a 2-year stultifying stint as a clerk at a bank in London, Wodehouse launched himself as a freelance journalist. McCrum brings to life this golden age of Edwardian magazines and newspapers in which Wodehouse found his literary voice. Throughout the teens into the 1930s, Wodehouse shuttled back and forth across the big pond, writing for Hollywood and collaborating with the likes of Jerome Kern and Cole Porter on musicals. About the latter experience, Wodehouse said, "Musical comedy was my dish, my spiritual home. I would rather have written Oklahoma than Hamlet." The great blunder of Wodehouse's life that I've skipped over, but that McCrum astutely investigates, is this. During World War II, Wodehouse, who'd been living in France, was interned in a series of prison camps by the Germans. The experience was horrific. Wodehouse and his fellow inmates suffered starvation. Some of the men had nervous breakdowns and committed suicide. Wodehouse entertained his fellow inmates by writing amusing stories about camp life. It's how he'd always responded to a tough situation. He made light of it. The Nazis, seeing a public relations opportunity in 1941, persuaded their famous English captive to go on radio and read some of his merry commentary on camp life. Wodehouse thought he'd be showing the world how he and his fellow captives were demonstrating stiff upper lipness, but the results were devastating. While figures like George Orwell and Dorothy L. Sayers rushed to Wodehouse's defense, he was denounced as, at worst, a collaborator, at best, a dupe by audiences in America and war-ravaged Britain. As Wodehouse later inadequately recognized, It was a loony thing to do. Without becoming an apologist for Woodhouse's stunning lack of judgment, McCrum makes it understandable. He also manages to scrutinize, without flattening, the writing of a comic genius whose constructions are as frothy as meringue. After all, what can a critic possibly say about gems like this line, uttered by Bertie Wooster in the 1938 classic, The Code of the Woosters? He spoke with a certain "what is it" in his voice, and I could see that, if not actually disgruntled, he was far from being gruntled.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Woodhouse, A Life, by Robert McCrum.